LibroFM lets you purchase audiobooks directly from your favorite local bookstore. Choose from more than 150,000 audiobooks, including New York Times bestsellers and recommendations from booksellers around the country. With LibroFM, you'll get the same audiobooks at the same price as the largest audiobook company out there. You know what one we're talking about, but you'll be part of a much different story, one that supports community.
If you're new to audiobooks, they're the perfect way to get more books into your busy life. Listen while doing chores, walking the dog, or just relaxing at home. All you need is a smartphone and the free LibroFM app.
If you already love audiobooks and don't know what to listen to next, check out recommendations and curated lists from the people who know audiobooks best, local booksellers.
Listeners of the Bookstore Podcast can get a 2-month audiobook membership for the price of 1 month.
Go to Libro.fm, that's LIBRO.FM, and enter bookstore at checkout. With each listen, take pride in knowing that you're supporting local bookstores.
Welcome to the bookstore.
It's like a book club, but we actually read the book.
I'm Becca.
I am Corinne. I think news to start us off with. Nothing really big is happening, but keep your eye on our Instagram pages. Page, just Instagram page, just the one. Because I think we'll be announcing a couple of giveaways coming up here soon. And if I say it on the podcast, that means I have enough pressure put on myself to actually post it. Because we've been talking about it for a while and I've just been lazy. So keep an eye out there. I think that's probably it. Our topic for today is graphic novels. We're going to have some recommendations a little bit later, but we just figured we'd talk maybe generally about them up top.
Yeah. So do you like reading them? What if we both just said no and ended the episode?
Yes, I do like reading them. Basically, the idea came to me because we've, first of all, been struggling to come up with ideas for the podcast for a little while because things are hard this year. And I was trying to think about things that I could actually recommend and be able to read because, as I've been telling everyone all year already, that I've been having trouble, like, focusing on getting any reading done that's outside of, like, the books we read for episodes. So graphic novels are a great place to go for that. I do like reading them. They're quick, usually. You can read them pretty quickly, and they're a nice, like, change of pace from regular reading if you're used to just reading novels and the like. But what do you think about graphic novels?
I think the same. They're a nice read. I think also I can tend to get into graphic novels that I might not get into regular novels. Like, I definitely read way more, like, sci-fi and fantasy in graphic novel format than in regular novels. I just think for me personally, it works better with it. Part of that is world building. I think not easier, but it's just different when you have a graphic novel and when you can, like, physically see the world.
Yeah.
So it makes it a little bit easier for me to really get immersed in the world. So that's something that I like about them.
Yeah. It's been a while since I have had read one when I suggested this for a topic. So I was thinking about, like, the different kinds of graphic novels that you get too. There's a pretty wide variety of stories that you can get. So, like you were saying, like, you can get a lot of science fiction. And of course, there's also, like, the action adventure type of comics that you're used to with superheroes and that sort of thing. But there's also, you know, like, a pretty good variety of like, emotional types of stories and memoirs, as well as just stories about, I just feel like lately and this has probably always been true. It's not like I'm a graphic novel expert anyway, but lately it seems like there's been a nice development in terms of getting really kind of, like, diverse stories, a lot of queer stories and stuff in graphic novel format too, which is just, like, really exciting to see and fun to check out. So I really enjoyed picking up what my library had, because luckily my library has a very well-curated selection of graphic novels. So that was really exciting.
Yeah, we have read for the podcast, My Favorite Thing is Monsters, what was the memoir one that we read?
Yeah, so My Favorite Thing is Monsters is by Emil Ferris, and The Best We Could Do by T. Bowie.
Yeah, and then we also read Harley Quinn Breaking Glass by Mariko Tamaki, and we did an interview with her as well, which I feel like all of those three are really different too, and they kind of showcase how much variety there is when we're talking about graphic novels.
Yeah, and even like speaking of like Mariko Tamaki, she writes the stories for a lot of graphic novels, and she works a lot of times with her cousin Jillian Tamaki, who is an illustrator. But she's also worked with other artists too. But yeah, her work like covers a lot of things. Like a lot of it tends to be young adult, but like, you know, they're kind of like realistic stories. And she also does Harley Quinn and other like traditional comic book kind of fare. So she's got a broad genre spanning, you know, style too. I don't know. They're fun. Truly believe there is something there for everybody if you're not like a huge fan of graphic novels, or maybe you just didn't know where to start. There's something there for you. So like, where did you start in reading graphic novels? Like just a brief history with them for you.
Yeah. I would have never, for most of my life, I would have never thought that graphic novels could be anything but superheroes. And so this was probably 2008, 2009. I was working at a bank, and my coworker, Amanda Webb, I have to give her a shout out. She was really into reading too. And so she brought me Fables and I think Sin City and Why the Last Man, I think. And there was probably a couple other ones too, but those are the first ones that I remember reading and realizing, oh, wow, there's so much more to graphic novels than Captain America and Batman or whatever.
Yeah. And I mean, like, I even like superhero stuff, too. I always found it really intimidating because, like, every so often they'll, like, reboot them. And I never knew, like, where to start or, you know, like, what you're supposed to do. There's just, like, so many points of entry that it just seemed really scary to me. Yeah. So, yeah, same. I think... when I was working at the bookstore, someone suggested Saga by Brian K. Vaughan to me, which was where I kind of started with reading graphic novels. And those ones are, like, they are released traditionally, like, as little comic, like, paper comic book issues. But that's where I got started, I think, unless you want to count Calvin and Hobbes, which I loved when I was in third grade. Which you can count. Since I've found, you know, that I really like to read graphic memoirs and stuff too. So, I don't know. There's really just like a lot of different options out there. Should we just get into our recommendations?
Sure.
Or do you have other topics you'd like to talk about regarding?
I think I will say this as we go into the recommendations. I think this is an area that I do need to maybe expand a little bit. I do tend to go for, they're not superhero, but they are like that superhero-esque in that these are generally longer running series and they have an element of the fantasy or the sci-fi or something like that. But yeah, that's kind of usually what I go for, but I should expand on that for sure.
Yeah, there's plenty of things out there if you can find them. One of the things, like, in terms of like getting access to graphic novels, I think like maybe that is slightly a barrier for entry for like some people, depending on where you're located. Like I said, I found my library had a really good selection of books, like physical copies, and they also had some available through Hoopla and Overdrive, which I read a couple of them through. So you might want to check those out if your library has options like that. And, you know, if they don't, you can always request that they get some things in. That's a possibility too. If your town or somewhere nearby has a comic book store, it's always fun to go and browse. I think when I first started reading comic books and graphic novels, I was like intimidated by the people who worked at comic book stores because like there was always that trope in like the 90s and stuff that like people would be mean to you and them or whatever. They're not, at least my local comic book store, Vault of Midnight in Grand Rapids. There are a few locations across Michigan. Everybody's always been like super helpful and very kind, and they have like a billion suggestions. So you can always do that too.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, I think you have money and they want to get your money. So,
yes,
they should be nice. But yes.
Do you want to start or should I start with recommendations?
I can start. So my first one is Monstrous, which is by Marjorie Liu and Sana Takeda. Takeda is the artist and Liu is the writer. This is published by Image Comics. I think all of my recommendations are actually published by Image. Sorry about that. I just happen to like that imprint, apparently. They're the new Vertigo, I guess. But since 2015 is when this one started. So I will start off by saying I wouldn't recommend this to just anyone. It's pretty dark and brutal. It's the first issue starts off with children being imprisoned in order for witches to experiment on them. So not for everybody, but it's definitely a high fantasy, epic fantasy kind of story. It's a world where witches or sorceresses use arcanics, I don't know how to pronounce it exactly, in order to get their powers, sort of like there's an upper class that is oppressing a different race than them and putting them into slavery and experimenting on them. And it is like an all matriarchal society. I wouldn't say that it really says anything specifically about women in power. They act just like any other people in like men in power. But it is just like kind of interesting and fun to like read something like that. So the story goes, arcanics are these like magical beings, and some of them can pass as humans and some of them can't. For example, there is a little like part fox child who follows Maika, who is the main character, around. So she has like a little fluffy tail and ears and stuff. It's very cute. But the main character, Maika, is an arcanic who does pass as human, and she is in possession of a secret that she shares her body with a monster, hence Monstrous. So the series kind of like explores how Maika is struggling with controlling the monster inside of her, understanding like what it means to have this uncontrollable thing inside of her. Like, is it part of her? Is it not? Kind of that kind of thing. But the thing that I like best about it is really the art. It's really pretty. It's kind of steampunky and kind of like old-timey Asian feel as well. And so all the like little kids are so adorable. All the monsters are very, very scary and dark. And then all the women are beautiful, basically, which is kind of unrealistic. But
that's
it makes
comic
it for,
books.
Yeah. It makes it look pretty on the page. So it's okay.
Uh-huh.
But the world building, I think, is really good in it because Liu and Takeda are able to kind of like weave in the mythology of it along with reading the story. So you get kind of a sense of the history and place. And yeah, that's my first one.
Sounds great. My first recommendation is called Dancing After 10 by Vivian Chong and Georgia Weber. That's 10 as in like the number spelled out, but it's actually an acronym. So this is a medical memoir that tells a story of Chong's life and recovery after a reaction to ibuprofen that causes her to have a rare skin condition, which is called toxic epidermal necrolysis. And so this condition 10 is what it goes by or is called. It causes scarring on sensitive skin and membranes, other tissues, including in Chong's case, her eyes. So she is left blind after a long stay in the hospital recovering from this disease that like nearly kills her. So in a lot of ways, this is kind of like a typical medical memoir in that she describes her experiences in recovery and learning to live on her own now that she is blind. And she's also far away from her family. So she lives in Canada, but her family lives in Hong Kong. So she's really kind of on her own. And you get like the story of like that kind of perseverance and stuff as she learns to take care of herself and cook and walk out on the street. And she she was always an artist. So, you know, she tries different ways to create art, and she continues to play drums in a band, and she then like takes up yoga, and she finds out that like if she just asks for help, people help her. So in a lot of ways, it's got like all of those kind of inspirational notes. But what's really interesting is that at one point she gets an experimental surgery that does give her her sight back for a very short period of time.
Oh, wow.
And in that period of time, she is like desperate to draw out her experience when she became sick. So like those images and those drawings are included in the book. So you kind of see them deteriorate as like she begins to lose her eyesight again. And then the rest of the drawings and illustrations in the book are by Georgia Weber, who conducted a lot of interviews with Vivian in order to like get the story right, because they collaborated on this together, which I think is like such an interesting project, right? Because she created a graphic novel despite not being cited any longer. And so, yeah, it's a really interesting kind of story. And it's also an interesting concept in terms of like art and disability and that sort of thing too. It was really cool. And I think she's worked to create a like one woman show based on this too, where she talks about her experiences. She's kind of like become a stand-up comedian. Like she's literally done everything now. So she's really a force to be reckoned with.
That sounds really good. The dynamic of writer and artist really fascinates me. And I know we talked like a little bit with Mariko Tamaki about this, but I just want to know, like, exactly how do you do that? Like, how do you write a graphic novel without being the one who's drawing it? And how do you let your writing, like your baby, somebody else draw it? I don't know. It's really interesting to me.
I think I might have forgotten to mention this. This was published this year, June 2020, by Fantagraphics is the publisher.
So my next one is Kaptara, which is by Chip Zdarsky and Kagan McLeod. Chip Zdarsky does the Sex Criminals one that I think probably a lot of people know. I think it won a bunch of awards. This was published by Image Comics in 2015. I don't know if it is still in print, I'll be honest. And there's only 5 issues, which are collected in 1 trade paperback. It is available digitally, though, so you can find it that way. And I am devastated that the series did not continue, because it's one of the most inventive and funny comics I've ever read. It's sort of like a parody of sci-fi, like all sci-fi tropes. Our hero is Keith Kanga, who is a gay Indian American, and he only gets on this special exploratory spaceship due to nepotism. And then after the spaceship crashes on this foreign planet, he's the only survivor. He's sort of how we would all probably act, as opposed to how sci-fi movies think people act. Like, he's a bioengineer, so somebody like hands him a stick to like fight with, and he's like, what am I gonna do with this? I don't know what I can do with this. Instead of, you know, when they have like somehow scientists are all like experts in karate, you know, in the movies.
Yes. Yeah.
And it made me laugh out loud when I read it, and I reread it too before this, just to make sure that it was still funny. So in his first encounter with the inhabitants of this foreign planet, they tell him in all this like sci-fi speak that they like trace this wormhole that his spaceship flew through, and it could only have been made by their ultimate enemy, whose name is Skull Thor, and that Skull Thor must be on his way to Earth to subjugate the people of Earth. And Keith's response is really just like, yes, that must be a thing that happened in real life. Because of course he doesn't believe it at all, because we wouldn't either. But in movies, everybody just automatically is like, yep, totally, this is real. And he also introduces himself as Keith, Prince of the Dance Floor. So then throughout the comic, people keep calling him Prince of the Dance Floor. It's extremely over the top. There's a character who says the only justice is blown justice, because he really likes his own poisoned blow darts. Yeah, I don't know. It's just, it's very funny. Keith doesn't even want to save Earth. Like, these inhabitants are going to, like, go save Earth from Skullthor. And Keith is like, yeah, no, thank you. I don't want to do that. But it's very, the art is also really cool. It's very bright and bold, colorful. There's bizarre creatures that they come up with, like this guy who's called Cyclowl. He's a man with the head of an owl with only one eye. And he doesn't really even have a big part. It's just all these like little things in the background that look really inventive and imaginative. Mm-hmm. It's a joy to read, I would say.
And sounds like fun. What was that called again?
Captara.
Captara. Okay. So my next recommendation is called Cosmonites. It's by Hannah Templer. It was published in September 2019 by Top Shelf Productions, but it is also available to be read online for free at cosmonites.space/comic. So this one is much more of like a traditional like space action type of graphic novel. And it's, I'll just read the tagline for you because I think like it's probably sold a lot of people and it may sell more people. So it does a pretty good job on its own. It's, for this ragtag band of space gays, liberation means beating the patriarchy at its own game. So our main character is named Pan. She is a mechanic at her dad's shop on their tiny planet. And when she was younger, she helped her best friend, Tara, who is a princess, escape on a visiting spaceship because in this universe, princesses are married off to the winners or the sponsors of winners of these jousting tournaments. So if you kind of think of like medieval jousting or gladiator type tournaments, but it's in space using like mechanical flying suits and, you know, big scary mechanical sci-fi weapons and stuff and suits of armor. And Pan, years after helping her friend escape, meets a couple of jousters who participate in the tournaments not to marry off the princesses, but to allow them to escape royalty altogether. And a little bit reluctantly, they, so it's Cass and I think B is her name, the other's name, they allow Pan to join their ranks to help them continue to do the jousting and save princesses this way. It's the first in a series, so there is more to the story than that, but it gives you a little bit of an idea. And I really like the art in this one. Again, the coloring is like very much contemporary graphic novel, graphic comic style, which is like a lot of deep midnight blues against hot pinks and coral colors, which is like just such a good color combination. Mm-hmm. So it's very beautiful to look at. And it's a fun story. It's very cute, but also manages to be like action filled, and it plays with like the old tropes of like rescuing princesses or having them rescue themselves. And it's, you know, it still does like all of the classic comic book stuff with like clang and boing and stuff, like being all, you know, big yeah. in the frames. And yeah, I liked it. It was a lot of fun. I don't know when the next part of it's going to come out, but I look forward to it because I liked these characters a lot.
Also space jousting, which sounds awesome.
Space jousting. Yeah. It's a ragtag band of space gays who space joust. It's fun.
So my last one is The Old Guard by Greg Rucca and Leandro Fernandez. This is also Image Comics, started in 2017. I believe there is 2 volumes out and 1 more to go. I think that'll be the last one. So I found out about this comic from the Netflix movie The Old Guard because I watched that movie and I loved it and found that it was a comic. So I wanted to go read it because I liked the characters so much that I hoped that I could be in their story a little bit longer. And I also really like this comic, which is good because the same cannot be said about The Boys, which is on Amazon, I think. And I read also based on a comic, and I tried to read that comic and it was too edgelordy for me. So had to tap out. anyways, So the Old Guard is about a group of semi-immortal people and sort of what they do and what they have been doing. I say semi-immortal because they will actually die someday, but they don't really know when. So some of them have been alive for hundreds of years, some of them for thousands of years, and then one new character has only been alive for like a couple weeks. We actually see when she figures out that she's immortal. Greg Rucka, the writer, he's also written Lazarus, which I have read and I like as well. And that also contains something about people who like can be killed and heal themselves. So he must have like a really big interest in that sort of thing. So in the Old Guard, we are introduced to Andy, who is the oldest, several thousand years old, Joe and Nikki, who met while killing each other in the Crusades, Booker, a former French soldier, and then the newest member, Niall, who discovers her own immortality after she survives having her throat cut. The movie follows the first trade paperback pretty closely. Sort of the plot of it is their secret ends up getting to the leader of a tech company who wants to use them to become immortal, which is like major, Peter Thiel vibes.
Yeah, yeah.
At least his motivations. But it's just, it's a interesting and it's a fun story. It sort of takes, you know, kind of the basic questions that every, you know, piece of media or entertainment that has immortality as a theme that deals with, you know, how do you use mm-hmm. it? Is it a curse? Is it a blessing? You know, what do you do with it? But it comes off as like fresh and new for me just because the characters are just really, really good and well written.
Cool. I didn't know that one was a graphic novel or a comic book before. I also haven't seen the movie yet, but I do love Charlize Theron, so yeah. Maybe I should check it out. My last recommendation should come as no surprise to anybody that I managed to find a comic book by the New York Review Books comics imprint. So we managed to be pretentious yet. It is called Pretending is Lying, and it is by Dominique Goblet, and it's translated from the French by Sophie Yanow. It was originally published in 2007 in Belgium, where Goblet is from, but it was published by the New York Review Comics in 2017. So this one is a bit more artistic as well as like a little bit more literary. It plays around with the structure of the story as it switches around in time, and it examines different relationships that Goblet has with her mostly absent alcoholic father, a lover who was like definitely cheated on her that she kind of had an unhealthy attachment to, and kind of like just below the surface of that is like you're aware that she has a young daughter, and that kind of like always keeps it like a little bit grounded and also a little bit more tense because she's exploring these different traumatic events in her life that are at the hands of or, you know, caused by these relationships that she has. And like some of them are from when she was a child. So like being reminded that she has a kid now and she's still dealing with it is kind of like a, I don't know. It's it reminds you, you know, that like the stakes are actually kind of high because these mm-hmm. things kind of work in cycles in a way. So don't expect like a super cohesive narrative with this story. It is mostly atmospheric, but the artwork is really, really special. I like a lot of it is done in pencil and there is not much color, but when it is used, it's really interesting. And like the drawing is kind like it moves between this like sometimes it's like so super detailed it's almost got like a photographic quality to it, and then sometimes there's like this abstract expressionism, and she draws like the characters in cartoonish ways that like represent their personalities, so they kind of like in ways like the art like as it moves through the panels and through the pages like morphs, and the people sort of change the way they look, like she changes the way she looks kind of depending on like who she's with and like how they might be seeing her too. It's, I don't know. It's really interesting. And the lettering is also super cool. It's all handwritten, which isn't that uncommon for comics or graphic novels, but it's in this way that kind of makes it seem like more of a collage art style. And when it's used with paint, like that's really kind of enhanced. And oh my gosh, like one of the most emotionally charged scenes, I don't want to like give it away or anything, it basically uses like, it's it's fictionalized a little bit in that the way that it's portrayed isn't necessarily how it happened in her real life, but the metaphor of it is really interesting. It uses this historical, like, actual accident that happened in a Formula One race and pairs it with, like, this traumatic event from her childhood. But depending on, like, the frame, sometimes you're seeing what's happening to her and then, like, the footage of, like, this car accident, or sometimes you're seeing the car accident and then the dialogue that, like, her mom is, you know, like, what her mom is saying to her at the time. And it creates this, like, really interesting juxtaposition that, like, really amps up the emotion of the scene. And it's so interesting because it's not something you can necessarily do in just a novel, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you don't have, like, the visual aspect to layer the written stuff over as well. So I really loved that because it kind of showed, like, how much further, like, a graphic novel can take these sorts of, like, metaphors and just can work with the content that they're using to create new meanings and in different ways. I really enjoyed it. I don't know that I left it fully understanding what happened, but I went back through after I was done and, like, flipped through it again because it was just so interesting and the artwork was really fascinating. So yeah, I liked that one a lot.
Yeah, that's something that I don't really know how to talk about because I don't think I'm knowledgeable enough in, like, art styles, is how graphic novelists can use, like, the drawings to mean different things. I'm mm-hmm. like, I know my favorite thing is Monsters did this a lot with, like, putting in fake movie posters and magazine covers.
Yeah.
And I love all of that stuff. And also, I'm the same as you. Sometimes I don't always really know what exactly I'm supposed to be getting out of it. But it's always so interesting to look at and to see how they're using the visual medium to say something.
Yeah, it's really cool. And I did read, like, a few other graphic novels for this episode specifically that I'm not going to be able to talk about on the episode, but I'll do a write-up and that'll go up on the blog. So watch out for that coming up. But there was another one that I read. It's called Epsara Engine, and it is by Bishak Somme. And she does that too, where she'll be writing a story and the story does not, like, at all match, like, the images that you're seeing, and there's, like, that third kind of meaning or story that you're also getting, like, at the same time, like, where you can have just the images and just the words, but then together they're, like, completely different. So yeah. I don't know, it's really interesting to see that, like, toyed around with. So cool stuff. Like I said, I will write up some reviews of some of the other ones if you're interested. You could probably find that in this show's listing on our website. You can also find all of the books that we mentioned in this episode in our show notes and on our website too.
Yeah, so if you have any graphic novels, especially that you really love, please, we would love to hear your recommendations. These are kind of the best for recommendations because, again, I can read, like, half of one on my lunch hour. So
yeah.
They're really nice.
Always looking for more. Well, thank you for listening to The Bookstore.
And if you would like to support the podcast beyond listening, you can check out our Patreon at patreon.com/thebookstore or rate and review us on Apple Podcasts.
You can find all of the ways you can contact us. Our email, social media, and phone line are all listed at thebookstorepodcast.com.
And our next book discussion will be The Only Good Indians by Stephen Graham Jones. You can find it at your local bookstore or library and read along with us. It's sort of our Halloween scary book discussion this year.
Yeah, it's a spooky one. And then after that, I think we've decided we will read for a mini episode The Witches by Roald Dahl because we haven't read it, but I remember the movie being so terrifying that we just wanted to have a nice little spooky Halloween episode. So The Bookstore is a production of Awkwardly Social Media, produced by Becky Young and Corinne Keener. Technical and production support is provided by Josh Bourdon and Zach Titus.
And John, if you're out there, thanks for listening.
See you next Tuesday.
Bye.
Bye. You can probably hear Josh, like, rattling dishes around in the background.
Yeah.